1 Samuel chapter 16, we're talking about the giant of indecision this morning. And about, Thursday of this week, I was really frustrated with this message. Most of the other messages, I usually kind of know, you know, where I'm wanting to go, and maybe it'll take some, you know, a little bit of turns, but for the most part, you know, here it is. And on Thursday, I was so frustrated because it wasn't going the way that I really thought that it should go, and it was taking 800 turns, and I got to laughing, and I started laughing out loud. No one else was around, which is always a weird thing if someone were to walk in and you're laughing and there's nothing going on. And I realized, here I am battling the giant of indecision about the message of the giant of indecision. And I was like, well, this kind of fits, doesn't it? And so I've wrestled all week long with which way to take this thing. And I finally decided, but I told Sherry this morning, I said, I still am undecided about my decision, and I'm not quite sure that this is what I really wanted to feel like going into the message, but I think that it's good that I wrestled with that giant this week so that I wasn't one who was just talking about something I hadn't been down that road. 1 Samuel chapter 16, verses 14 to 18, and then we're going to skip over to chapter 17. We've looked a little bit about the life of David with Goliath, and we're kind of picking back on that theme. Verse 14, it says, "Now the Spirit of the Lord had left Saul, and the Lord sent a tormenting spirit that filled him with depression and fear. Some of Saul's servants suggested a remedy. 'It is clear the spirit from God is tormenting you,' they said. 'Let us find a good musician to play the harp for you whenever the tormenting spirit is bothering you. Harp music will quiet you, and you will soon be well again.' 'All right,' Saul said, 'find me someone who plays well and bring him here.' One of the servants said to Saul, 'The son of Jesse is a talented harp player. Not only that, he is brave and strong and has good judgment. He is also a fine-looking young man. The Lord is with him.'" When I read that scripture, I think of myself. Do you not? No, you did not. For shame on you. You know, I always find that amazing that some guy would describe David like that. You know, it's kind of like, what is he describing him like that for? But here is David, who is already well-known for being a good harp player. And that's really all he's really known for. Nice looking guy, seems to be pretty smart, and this is who he is. Now then, skip over to chapter 17, verses 17 to 23, because this is where we pick up where David is now going to transition. It says, "One day Jesse," this is David's father, "said to David, 'Take this half bushel of roasted grain and these 10 loaves of bread to your brothers, and give these 10 cuts of cheese to their captains. See how your brothers are getting along and bring me back a letter from them.' David's brothers were with Saul and the Israelite army at the Valley of Elah, fighting against the Philistines. So David left the sheep with another shepherd and set out early the next morning with the gifts. He arrived at the outskirts of the camp just as the Israelite army was leaving for the battlefield with shouts and battle cries. Soon the Israelite and Philistine forces stood facing each other, army against army. David left his things with the keeper of supplies and hurried out to the ranks to greet his brothers. As he was talking with him, he saw Goliath, the champion from Gath, come out from the Philistine ranks, shouting his challenge to the army of Israel." Let me ask you this question. What do you do when you get stuck? You know, you are doing life pretty well, and then all of a sudden, without warning, without something that you're looking for, there is a fork in the road, and you've got to make a decision. There's an intersection that comes in your life, and you're forced to make a decision. And sometimes what I've found out is, it would be great if there was just a fork in a road where there was two decisions, but sometimes there's multiples, isn't there? Multiples decisions about, should I take this job? Should I date this girl? Should I change what I'm doing? Should I start my own business? What should I do? Should I go to this college or this other college? Should I have this major or another major? Should I double major? Should I not go to school at all? Should I just start working? And it seems like that these things always come with multiples. At least it has been that way in my life. I usually don't get where there's just two options. I usually get several. And then that's when it gets really, really confusing, because I'm like, oh man, what would God have me do? What am I supposed to do? What if I choose wrong? What if I choose poorly? You know, what if I don't do what God wants me to do? And that moment of indecision makes us freeze. And I'm sure that you've been there too, where you've been kind of like, man, I don't know what to do. Maybe that's where you are this morning. You've got some decisions right in front of you. Maybe it's school, maybe it's work-related, maybe it's, you know, finding a mate or whatever else, and you just get stuck. Let me ask you this question again. What do you do when you get stuck? Do you go to friends and ask their advice and see what they would do? Or, you know, maybe you ask a mentor, or maybe you just guess. Maybe you just say, you know, God's just kind of set this thing up like a stack of dominoes, and it's just all been pushed basically for me, and it's just a random choice, and it doesn't really matter. Is that the way you approach life? Is that the way that you approach your decision making? Or do you say, you know, God, what would you have me to do? Because here's what I found out. A lot of times when I ask God what he wants me to do, why does it seem so silent? You ever been there before where you just kind of go, God, I'm asking you for help and you're not helping me. It's just silent. I think the ultimate questions that we have to ask this morning and when we get stuck is this, and because this is ultimately going to be how our life is going to be run. Who is our authority? Because when you get stuck, when you finally have to make that decision, and maybe it's a decision not to make a decision, which is still a decision, you're just putting it off. You're procrastinating, so it's still a decision, okay? But who is going to be the final authority? You know, I think that a lot of times what we do is we just kind of wing it, and we ask some friends, maybe their advice, or sometimes we just kind of say, oh, it doesn't really matter, it's all a random thing, and we just go for whatever that it is. And what we usually do is, and this is what I found out in my own life, is we honestly think that this is the ultimate question. The ultimate question never comes to our mind of, you know, where is our authority? Who's going to be the final determining factor in all this? It's usually this. Well, how bad can it be? You know, is it really that bad? Is it really that wrong? Or, you know, we get stuck on those things and we think, you know, it really can't be that bad. And then the follow-up question to that usually occurs not too long after that, and that is, how did I get myself in this big mess? How did this all go wrong? Last week, we talked about looking at our past and realizing that God offers forgiveness, and he wants to cast our sin as far as the east is from the west, and that he remembers it no more. And really what this is about this morning is prevention of those times. Last week, we dealt with the past. Really, this week is about prevention. And when you come to those times in your life where you just honestly get stuck and you're being pulled one way or another, and sometimes it's a question of morality, and sometimes it's a question of, is this really wrong to do? And then other times it's not a question of morality, it's a question of, should I take this job? Should I marry this person or not? And it's really not a moral decision as much as it is. It's going to affect the rest of your life. And not only that, you probably realize it'll not only affect the rest of my life, it'll affect if I have children one day, and it'll affect their children's children. And man, that's what causes us to freeze up, because like, man, that's way too much pressure. I remember being single and thinking, man, when I was making my decisions, I didn't have to worry about if it would really affect my wife because I'm single, right? You know, man, I could make decisions just like that. Boy, you get married and suddenly you realize, wow, I've got something I've got to come home to and explain why I made this boneheaded decision, you know? I mean, you're single, you're just like, whatever, you know? Man, you get married and then a kid comes along or whatever else, and boy, the pressure really mounts. What if I choose wrong? So what do you do when you get stuck? Do you go and seek after God? Or do you just kind of wing it? Do you just kind of say, you know, whatever happens, happens? One of the things that I've noticed is that a lot of times when we make poor decisions, it usually becomes about because we get real creative. Have you ever noticed that? That your most stupid decisions come when you get the most creative. You find a way to justify it. And what I found out is the good decisions are usually not ones that you have to get real creative about. It's like the guy that knew that he needed to go on a diet. I mean, he knew that he needed to go on a diet, but he always went to this donut shop every day, you know, and he really liked the donuts there. And it was just kind of the way to get his work day started. And so he was like, you know, God, I'm going to give this to you. I know that I need to be on a diet. I don't need to be going by the donut shop every morning. And so what he prayed was, is, God, if I drive by the donut shop and if there's not an empty parking space, then I'll know that it's not your will for me to go. And he said, you know, it took me 10 times going around that donut shop before there was finally an empty parking space that it was God's will for me to get a donut that morning. And haven't we all been there? It's kind of like, how creative can I get, you know? God, if it's not your will, then don't let it, you know, this happen, or make this thing, you know, really happen. And then when it doesn't really go that way, we're like, oh, wait a second. He probably didn't want to answer it like that. Let's change this up a little bit. You ever been there and just pray those outrageous prayers? And you just kind of throw these creative things out there. We were at an office the other day, and Sherry and I were sitting there, and I asked this young lady, I was like, hey, how was your trip to New York? Because I knew she'd gone to New York, and she just got real quiet and looked at us, and she never really does that. And I was like, okay, that probably wasn't a good question. She said, well, I went with some of my friends and blah, blah, blah. And I could tell she really didn't have a good time. And she said, and then we got up on Saturday morning, and she said, these people are like still in graduate school type of thing. And I was like, yeah. Now she's in the workforce, okay? And she said, we went shopping. I was like, okay, you know, fair enough. And she goes, one of them spent $2,000 on clothes and the other one spent $3,000 on clothes. I was like, wow. I don't know that I've ever spent that much, like in 5 years of buying clothes, you know? And I'm thinking graduate level, let's see here, how much income would they have? Zero, you know, more outgo than they do income. And I was sitting there thinking, how creative did they have to be to slap that credit card down? And she looked at me and she said, you know, I'm thinking that probably didn't go on the debit card. And I was like, yeah, you're probably right if they're in grad school. Now, maybe their parents are really, really, really wealthy, but I don't think so. I think they just slapped down a credit card. And you know what? We do the same thing. We just get so creative with some of our decision-making, and we just totally nullify it because, you know what we do? Our authority is how creative we can be to dance around what the decision really needs to be like. You know what David did? David did the small things, knowing that the small things made him practice good decision-making for the big things. The small things always lead to great decision-making for the big things. When football players and athletes are trained, they have to make split-second decisions. They don't have time to call timeout all the time and say, coach, you know, what do you think? The pass is in midair, and I've called time to freeze it. Do you think I should have thrown that pass? Should I go and retrieve that and bring it back? They don't have time for that. They practice every day so that when it comes to game time, they're reacting, not really making decisions. And any good player will tell you when it comes to game day, they'll tell you, oh, well, you know, that guy made a bad decision or he made a, you know, a good decision. Man, it happens that quick. There's not a whole lot of, you know, study that they can do. They've had to do that prior to that point. You know what that was? Every day in practice, same kind of throw, same kind of look. Here's what you're going to do. It's a reaction. And, you know, in our decision-making, if we're going to learn to get unstuck, if we're going to learn to make good decisions, we can't wait for the big stuff to show up to finally say, well, now then I'm going to make a good decision. No, because you've practiced wrong. You've practiced wrong. And I thought about those graduate level students slapping that thing down on the credit card, and man, I'm sure it's great and everything else. But you know, they're getting real creative on why they did it. You know, man, well, you know, we're only going to be young once. I wrote down some things this last week that I know that I've done in getting real creative, and maybe you've done it too. because we've got all these compelling voices all the time in our heads going on. Here's one of the things I wrote down that sometimes I hear in my head: you deserve it. You deserve it. You know, go ahead, go do that. You deserve it. Next one: you should reward yourself. You know, you've kind of had it rough. You know, it's been a rough couple of months. You know, we've got it really rough in the United States, you know, compared to everybody else, right? It's real tough here compared to everybody else in the world. Next one is: you were only young once. You know, you're only young once. You need to go out and do all that. Next one I wrote down was, and this is what tripped up these graduate level students: they've got a great payment plan. You go to Best Buy, you go to these places, and how do they usually package it? They usually don't want to show you the total price. What do they show you in the big letters? $150 a month, right? Sounds great. $150 a month? Dude, I can so do that. I'm there. Projection, 55-inch TV. You better believe it. For 18 years, you will now be paying on that, you know, television. They know what really entices us. When you go to buy a car, they don't want you looking at the sticker. They want you to know, hey, man, yeah, we can get you in that car. What can you do it for per month? They don't want you saying, it was 20 what thousand? I've never made 20-something thousand yet. Oh, don't worry about that. It's $300 a month. Really? Yeah, fully loaded? Well, 3/4. All right. Well, if it's 3 1/4 fully loaded, sure, I'm there. Well, now you will need to get insurance. Oh, well, that's no big deal. And then it all piles up on us. And, you know, isn't that how we approach our decision making? And we just practice wrongly. And then we look at our credit statement and it comes in. And the American public, the average credit card debt, consumer debt is $16,000. Are you kidding me? You know, the two things that Americans battle, the top two things: obesity and consumer debt. Those of you in the financial industry, you know exactly what I'm talking about. It. You witness it every single day. We're witnessing foreclosures on an all-time high. Never have we had more foreclosures on homes since the Great Depression. And everybody just goes along like everything's just fine. Man, credit card companies love you because, yeah, they don't care if you make the minimum payment because they're going to get theirs. They're earning 20%, 26% interest. And you think, oh, well, all I got to pay is $150 a month. And man, you're just wrecking your life. And you'll find out one day, you know what the number one cause for divorce is? It's not infidelity. It's not anything else. Number one cause for divorce is financial pressure, money. It's debt. Man, if there's one thing that I could tell every couple that's about to get married is, get out of debt as fast as you can. I'm not talking about home ownership, okay? That's an investment. You've got something to show for it. I'm talking about revolving credit. That type of stuff is bad news. I will honestly tell you, and I haven't missed a thing because of it. Sherry and I have never carried over a balance except for when we forgot, which occasionally does happen, okay? It happens. We've never carried one over. Now, thankfully, we've paid well enough that when we called the credit card company and said, hey, man, we forgot, and if you look back, we never forget and everything else, they'll give you one time a year, usually one time a year, okay. We've had to use that. And I want you to know, I haven't missed anything. I haven't missed anything. Now, I know there's times that, man, an emergency comes up, and you got to do something. But if you're trying to keep up with everybody else and you're trying to pay all these things out, you're headed for trouble. And you may think, well, I'm single right now. It really doesn't matter. Yeah, but one of these days you may not be. And if you've created yourself a nightmare, then the two of you have got to dig it out. Let me encourage you, don't go down that path. As much as possible, stay away from it, okay? Practice good decision-making. David knew how to do that. Listen to Proverbs chapter 16, verse 25. It says this: there is a path before each person that seems right, but it ends in death. There's a path before every person that seems right, but it ends in death. Now, I know that some of you may be thinking, well, now he's talking about just spiritually, you know, that, you know, one person may make it to heaven, another person go to hell. That's part of it, but he's talking about your life in general as well, too. He's not talking about just in eternity. He's talking about now. So let me ask you again, how do you make your decisions. When you get stuck, where do you go? Who's your authority? Who's going to make that big decision? Who are you going to lean on? You just going to wing it? Or you actually got some principles you're going to follow? I want to give you a couple of things this morning that I think will really help you. Because in my opinion, the power of decision-making is the greatest power that God has given us. When you really think about it, the power of your decisions is incredible. You can choose to be mean to someone. Someone can choose literally to take someone else's life. Someone else, though, at the same time can help give life by a good word, by an encouraging word, by being there for somebody in the time of disaster. The power of decision-making is unbelievable. You can choose to start your own business. You can choose to become a part of a corporation. You can choose whom you would like to marry. The power of decision-making that God has given to us, in my opinion, is the greatest power that we have. And every single day, you and I are faced with just a myriad of decisions. I don't know if you know this or not, but a rhinoceros, you know, the big things with the big, you know, point on the front of them, they can only see 30 feet in front of them. That's it. A rhinoceros can also run between 30 to 40 miles an hour. Now, if you know anything about feet per second, he's running, or she, the she rhino, is running faster than what it can see when it goes full bore. Now, isn't that comforting? You know what a herd of rhino is called? A crash. Perfect description, isn't it? And you know something? I think that a lot of times in life, we're exactly like the rhino. Man, in front of us, there are decisions that we're having to make every single day. Every single time you get in your car, you're trying to figure out which lane am I going to be in? Am I going to change lanes? Am I going to do this? Am I going to buy something today? Who am I going to call today? What do I need to follow up on? Oh man, the medical bills. I've got to deal with that. I mean, you're faced with decisions constantly, and it's like we are like the rhinos, man. At 100 miles an hour, we're having to make decisions, and we're about as good as a rhino, you know? We're just crashing through life. Let me give you some things that I think might help you. In Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, you don't have to turn there, but I want you to listen to this. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 1, and then we're going to look at verse 6. It says, "What is faith? It is the confident assurance that what we hope for is going to happen. It is the evidence of things we cannot yet see." Then verse 6 says, "So you see, it is impossible to please God without faith. Anyone who wants to come to him must believe that there is a God and that he rewards those who sincerely seek him." The first thing that you need to learn is to have a courageous faith, because it's going to take that in decision making. You're not going to be able to sit back and hear this voice from God at midnight saying, "Steve, you've been praying and I've heard you, and here is your answer." If that ever happens to you, would you please tell me about it and how that worked for you? Because I've never had that happen, and you're probably not going to either. So in order to get unstuck, here's what you've got to understand. God rewards faith, and faith is not things that we see, it's things we don't see. And it goes on to say that God rewards those with great faith. In other words, God says, "Hey, if you're going to come after me, the people that I reward are those who have faith." So you're going to have to determine, you're going to have to become unstuck. You can't just sit around and wait for somebody else to push you out. That's not what God's going to do. He's going to wait for you to make a decision. You know, when you look at David's life, David made some crucial decisions, didn't he? Spur of the moment. You know how he conquered Goliath? Not because he knew that he could conquer Goliath, but because he also knew, as we studied several weeks ago, he says, "Hey, my God was with me with the lion. My God was with me with the bear. Why can't I defeat Goliath?" He didn't just show up and deal with Goliath. He had already had these victories in his life, and he realized, "Hey, my faith is in God, and if God can do that, he can deal with this." You've got to learn to have courageous faith, and it's going to scare you to death, because you're going to step out into the unknown, and you're going to go, "Here goes." So here's the second thing that I think that you're going to have that really helps me out. Sweat the small stuff. And I know that there's lots of teachings, and I've heard it, "Oh, never sweat the small stuff." But here's what I mean by sweat the small stuff, okay? learn to be obedient to God, because if you learn to be obedient to God in the small things, when the big things come up, it doesn't make it easy, it makes it easier. But if you wait for the big things, the big Goliaths in your life to show up, and you've never really been obedient to God, yeah, you're going to struggle. You're going to really struggle. David was a guy that knew, hey, I got to sweat the small stuff. If you notice how he got there, it's easy to overlook it because everybody talks about David and Goliath, but no one talks about David the harp player. No one talks about David the shepherd. No one talks about David being the youngest in his family and his dad looking at him and saying, hey, here's basically a happy meal. Take it to your brothers. You know what David could have done? And this is what most of us would have done. Man, I hate my brothers. They're all the time putting me down. I'm not taking them food. I'm going to go over here a couple miles away. I'm going to tell everybody I'm leaving. I'm going to get somebody else to take my spot. And I'm going to go over here and I'm going to eat their happy meal. I'm going to have a good time. Then I'm going to come back and I'm going to tell Dad they're doing great. It was a great time. They love the food. You know, when you really think about it, if David would have done that, totally missed his life. But he knew to sweat the small stuff because it was through his obedience to his dad's simple request. You know, it's kind of like when mom and dad would say, hey, I need you to take out the trash. And we'd be like, I'm going to take out the trash. You know, I've got to go all the way outside and it's snowing and I'm not going out there and you're stupid and I don't like you. And, you know, that's what David was being asked to do. Hey, go see your brothers. Take them this food. Tell me how they're doing. I'm going to go see those guys. Every time I show up, they put me down. And you notice, if you know the story real well, just as soon as he showed up and he started asking questions, what did his brothers do? You get out of here. We know what you're up to. Man, he could have said, well, that's it. I'm taking the happy meal and going home. Totally missed out. Would have totally missed out on what God was going to do in his life. Learn to sweat the small stuff. Learn to be obedient to God. Third thing is this. Surround yourself with faith-filled friends. Surround yourself with faith-filled friends who are going to encourage you that when those decisions come up, you can't naturally just look at them and say, hey, you know, tell me what you know I need to do, but you can find out their advice. You can find out maybe what they've been through. Maybe you can find a mentor in your life that's kind of been through some of the same things and can give you some guidance. You know, when you find those friends around you who will always be in your corner, and will always tell you the truth no matter what, man, you need to listen to them. Some of you, one of these days, are going to try to figure out who this special little sugar booger is, you know, if you want to marry her or not. Yeah, sugar booger. If you want to marry her or not, or marry him or not. And if your friends are looking at you going, are you really seeing all these things? You know what we have a tendency to do? Oh, they don't know what they're talking about. I see clearly. So does everybody else, right? But love blinds. You know that. It's just that you don't think that it blinds you. It blinds everybody else. You've been around when your friends went out with a jerk, and then 2 months later, she was like, I don't know why I went out with him. He's a jerk. And you were like, he was a jerk the whole time. We knew it. We told you he was a jerk. You just didn't listen to us. It blinds us. And if you're not real careful, if you don't have those faith-filled friends around you who can look at you and tell you the honest truth or can encourage you on days that, man, it just didn't go well. You made a faith decision. You tried to go out and you fell flat on your face. Man, you need to have those people around you that say, hey, get up, get back out there again, learn from this, keep moving, keep going. You got to have those people around you or else you're going to have trouble. Here's kind of one of your good practical stuff for this morning. You show me your friends and I'll show you your future. You show me your friends, I'll show you your future. It doesn't mean that all of them have to be successful CEOs that, oh, that means that, you know, I've got to have those in my life. No, you don't have to have that. But you show me your friends and I can show you your future. You hang around bad company, it's going to be bad. It's just the absolute truth. You watch the news and you see something happen and you realize, wow, look at where that person grew up. Look who their friends were. And what do we usually know? They grew up around, they picked the wrong friends. Choose your friends wisely. The fourth thing is this. Here's what you can rest assured and know. God will move it the way it needs to go. See, a lot of times the reason why I get stuck is I freak out thinking that I'm totally going to miss God's will and God's going to hate me because I, you know, and he's just waiting for me to make the wrong move so he can smack me, you know. You ever felt like that? Man, you're really, really trying to follow what God wants you to do and you make the wrong move. He's like, wrong. You're like, oh, no, what did I do? You're stupid is what you are. You know, you feel like God's going to do that. And here's the deal. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, one of the most quoted scripture verses that we have says this, trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him. He will direct your paths. Let me just kind of break that down for you. Trust is that whole leap of faith thing that we talked about at the beginning. Trust in the Lord. Man, that's what faith is all about, is trusting in God with all your heart. Lean not onto your own understanding. In other words, don't just always wing it. Who's your authority? Who's going to be the final determining factor? Is God going to be the final determining factor or you? Because if you look back as we talked about our past, I'll bet you every one of your decisions that you regret were totally against whatever God would have you do. I mean, think back to it. Your biggest regrets are probably when you said, ah, I'm going to do what I want to do when I want to do it. That's what usually happens. Trust in the Lord with all your heart. Lean not unto your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him. Now, that's a really bad translation because it sounds like we're supposed to tip our cap to God, like, hey, I'm acknowledging you. Hey, there you are. That's not what it means. What it means is this. It literally means, as you're on your journey, make sure you know where he is. Get to know him. In all your ways, that's what it means. On your journey, wherever you are, with whatever you're doing, get to know him. And listen to what it says. And he will direct your paths. The literal meaning there is to make them straight, to make them smooth. And I don't know about you. I don't like potholes physically, and I don't like them spiritually. I want something smooth, something out there. And that's when you know that God's going to take care of it. He will make it what it needs to be. And you'll look back and go, oh, man, now I see how God was directing me. Give you an honest story from the start of Gateway. When it was on our hearts to launch this church in Cleveland, I'd met a guy at a conference in San Diego, never heard of him before. Sherry and I saw what he was going to talk about. We were like, hey, that kind of sounds cool. It was called No Perfect People Allowed. And we were like, well, that's us. So we went in there to the seminar thing, and there were thousands of people there. But at the seminar, kind of a little breakout session, there couldn't have been more than 15 people in there, right, Sherry? I mean, there was very few people in there. Man, we just fell in love with this guy. We were like, wow, we really like this guy. And he said, yeah, I do have a book that just came out. If you want to buy it, it's over at the bookstore. And so we bought it, No Perfect People Allowed. And man, we gleaned a lot from that. I mean, it was amazing. Great book. If you ever want to read a great book, No Perfect People Allowed by John Burke is excellent. And we really liked being around him, and I'd send him a few emails. Hey, we're thinking about starting a church. I know that you started one down in Austin, and you know, here's where we are on this thing. And so he and I have kind of tossed some emails back and forth. Well, that book went on, and man, it's one of the best sellers out right now. I mean, you know, there wouldn't be 15 people in a seminar now than with John Burke. There would be thousands. And that was just a year and a half ago. And I remember as we were struggling to figure out, what do we want to name this church? Because, you know, once you name it, that's it. You know, there's lots of things you can do differently within the church. But once you name it, that's pretty much what you got. And I'm not originally from Cleveland. Sherry is. And so I was learning a lot of things about Cleveland. And we were living out in the suburbs, so I didn't really know a whole lot about downtown. And Sherry said, you know, I am tired of hearing us saying that we're going to go start a church. Would you name the church? Okay, the moment of indecision, right? What do we name it? Because, man, this is pressure. Either people are going to love it, hate it, or be indifferent to it, well, you know, but usually love it or hate it. And I told her, I said, I don't want to just steal this guy's name of his church, but I just can't get away from it. And she goes, well, what's the name of it? I said, Gateway Community Church. I said, I'd love to call it Gateway Church. I don't want to do the whole community thing because then it sounds like you're alienated from somebody else that only this community can come. And she looked at me and she goes, don't you know where you're launching the church, that one of the districts downtown is called the Gateway District? And I said, get out. No way. And she goes, yeah. I was like, honey, I believe you, but I don't believe you. You know, it's just one of those moments that you just go, no way. So she drove me down here because I said, I don't want to have to drive and try to look. I want you to drive me down here. And so I'm looking around, and here's all these signs pointing to Gateway. And I was just like, no way. No way, of all the thousands of names, you know, that could be out there. And then wouldn't you know it, that when we finally reached an agreement with somebody, which we didn't care if it was in the Gateway District or Warehouse or wherever it was, that the place that we would be in is in the Gateway District. And the Gateway District's not that big of a district. You know, when you look back, you realize how that leap of faith to go start the church, that God put around us some people and guided us, and we picked a random seminar in San Diego, spoke with this guy named John, liked him enough to buy his book, read his book. Right when I needed to find a name, there was a name that I was like, wow, I really like that name. And then come to find out, that's what's in downtown Cleveland. So everybody that sees Gateway always thinks, oh, they named it because they're in that district. Well, no, it's a total God story. I'm not that smart to pull that off, okay? And you know that by now. If you've been here at least 30 minutes, you figured that out. And you know, that's what I'm talking about with the end. When you trust in the Lord with all your heart, don't lean into your understanding, in all your ways, get to know Him, find out what's going on in the journey, He will make your path straight. He's going to make it smooth. He's going to make it what it really needs to be. In your moment of indecision, and I'm going through them right now, trust me, that's what I have to rely on, is that if I'm really after God, He's not there to smack me when I make, you know, the wrong choice. He's going to steer it exactly the way it needs to go. Because I also learned to sweat the small stuff. You learn to do that. You learn to find those people to get around you. And I just want to encourage you this morning, when you are trying to find out what God has for you, understand this. God cares more about that decision than what you ever will. You may think that you care more about it than what He does, but you don't. But if you do some of those things, I really believe God's going to show up in your life, and you're going to do like what I've done and look back and go, wow, look at how He used us to go to California to meet this dude just for the name. And if He cares that much about the name, how much more does He care about us? How much more does He care about the people around here? So when you face that giant of indecision, God's going to direct when you submit to Him. I want everyone just to bow their heads and close their eyes this morning. I don't know what your indecision is. We're faced with them all the time. You may think, well, you know, mine doesn't seem that like that big of a deal. But you know something? If it's a big deal to you, it's a big deal to God. And what I really want to challenge you and encourage you to understand is those four principles of understanding that it's going to take faith. You're not just going to get everything rolled out in front of you. You're going to have to make some really hard decisions. But not to freeze up over that, but to understand that, okay, I know that I've got to have faith, and I know I've got to trust in God. I've got to be obedient, even in the small things. I've got to surround myself with some people that's going to give me some wise counsel. And then ultimately, knowing this, that with whatever decision I make, that God's going to make my path straight. And you know, it is a great and freeing thing when you know that God's going to fix what you might guess wrong, when your heart is right. Because when your heart is right, your decision in the end will always be the right thing. And it's a great and freeing moment when we realize that, man, God's fixing my stuff. He's making sure that when I don't maybe do quite what I think is the right thing to do, that He helps me. And that He's right there beside me on the journey. Father, we come before You this morning, and I know in my own heart and in my own mind that I'm just really wrestling with some decisions and struggling with that. And it just seems like, well, gosh, well, how will this affect everything? And it makes me want to freeze up rather than understanding that you care more about that decision than what I do. And most importantly, you care more about me than just the decision. And Father, I feel like I'm not alone this morning. This has just been a tumultuous week. It was a rough night last night, and it clearly told me this morning that there's just a lot of spiritual stuff going on, which means there's several of us in this room that need it, myself included. So Father, help me as the pastor of Gateway that I wouldn't just flippantly look at decisions like they're no big deal because they do shape other people's lives. But also, Lord, let me see that I can't freeze up because you're right there with me. And if my heart is right, you're going to steer me on the right path. You're going to make it the way that it needs to be. Father, help all of us to see that. That no matter what's happened in the past is gone. But man, we can do something about the future. We can do something about now. So Father, help us this morning. Guide us in the direction that you would have for us. Just pray all this in Jesus' name. Amen. If you're new to us, please do me a favor and fill out one of those connection cards and put that in the popcorn box so that I can get to know you at some point. And I just really want to encourage you this morning, if you're battling a decision, I can't necessarily make that decision for you, but I can listen and maybe say, hey, I know someone that maybe has battled that same decision, or I know someone that's a great decision maker and this is who you need to talk to. Maybe you can put that on the card, say, hey, I need to get together with you and let's just kind of talk this thing out. And I'll be there to cheer you on and encourage you, because one of these days I may need you. I may need you to help me. And so let's work together. Let's work together and let's be there for one another. Why don't you just take some time to reflect this morning on that giant of indecision about what God would have you do.
Speaks better word than all the empty clay.